Good morning. I'm Kara Lawrence. Joining me here are the cast and director of the latest Farmers Alley Theater production. It's called The Andrews Brothers, and I'm really thrilled to have with me today Paul Castry, who plays Max. We have Jeffrey Scott Parsons, who plays Patrick and is choreographer. And we have director Larry Rabin, who is returning for another season at Farmers Alley. So nice to have you all here.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Larry, you were here for Forever Plaid as director in a piece that was you were very close to at the time.
Yes, it was a show that I did from the original workshop in New York, and then did it through the original cast, and it was part of my life for about 4 years, and then finally made the film version. So yes, it's very near and dear to my heart and my career.
How close are you to the Andrews Brothers?
The Andrews Brothers is a similar thing. Creator Roger Bean had seen David Engel and Stan Chandler and I in Plaid and had liked our work and our energy together, and he had this idea for a musical where three brothers, who are USO stagehands, are backup singers to a famous pinup girl, and then a lot of hijinks ensue. But so he was looking for three people that had a real grasp on physical comedy and also on tight harmony singing. So he came to us and shaped the piece around us, and it was a real joy to get in on the ground floor of that one as well.
So that's really how that got made. It was sort of designed out of inspiration of seeing the three of you in Forever Plaid.
Well, yes, Roger had always loved the movies of Betty Hutton, and he just loved her energy. She has a pluck and a sparkle about her. Most people probably know her as the star of the Annie Get Your Gun movie, but she did a lot of films with Bing Crosby, Bob Hope. She did a lot of USO work as well. She was famous for doing concerts, but she was really, you know, she had gumption. She had pluck about her. So he thought he wanted to take that kind of screwball comedy from the World War II era and make a stage show about it and let that energy of that girl be the focus. And then he thought, well, how do I pair three guys with her? So that's kind of where we came in. And yeah, it's nice to be in the right place at the right time.
We're definitely getting to a place in time where a show like this is really introducing 75% of its audience to some of the songs in the area.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of that era, rather.
Yeah. It's fun I've done four different productions of the show as an actor, and it's really great. It's one of those things that Forever Plaid did so well, is you look out and you see a six-year-old and you see a 96-year-old in the same row, and they're all getting different things out of it. I think that the younger kids, you know, they love harmony, they love physical comedy, so it's just funny to them. But for the older, the way older audience, it's a real walk down memory lane for all of that great swinging music of the 1940s.
Well, the Andrews Brothers opens not this Friday, but the following Friday.
That's right. It's April 21st, and it runs through May 7th at the Little Theater.
That's right. The Little Theater is the temporary but very fond home right now of Farmers Alley Theater, which its downtown theater is still relatively inaccessible.
Oh, yes, yes. We live above it in the cast housing right now. And yeah, we hear them tearing up the street every morning. They start good and early, making lots of beeps and whistles and...
It's going to be phenomenal when it's done.
It sure will. But we're actually very lucky to be in the Little Theater for the show, because it has quite a bit of scenery. It's all meant to be the kind of stuff that these guys would have painted on a tropical island, handmade themselves. But they still have made some pretty big pieces. And I don't think the show ever would have fit in, you know, the Farmer's Alley proper space. So we're lucky to have the Little Theater. It's going to be gorgeous in there.
Well, Paul and Jeffrey, I'm not sure whether to start with your characters or with your biographies, but, you know, we have a good long time in this segment. We have all the way till 11 o'clock. So let's start with some origin stories here. Since you're on mic, Jeffrey, Scott Parsons, Paul is commanding the microphone now.
No, I'm Paul.
Oh, forgive me. I'm so sorry.
I'm Paul.
I switched your names.
That's okay.
Paul.
Yes.
Castry.
Yes.
You are making your debut in this production.
That's right.
But you have a lot of experience.
Yes. Larry is a friend from, I did
Forever Plaid a long time ago in New York. And then not too long after that, I got to do it in Los Angeles with Larry. We performed it together.
Yeah.
And so I've known him for many years. And he called and asked if I wanted to do this piece, told me a little bit about it. And first of all, it's a comedy, which everyone should know. It's a very, very funny piece. And so already I want to do it because that's just what I love to do. You know, and it has all the harmony singing like we did in Forever Plaid, although this is mostly Andrew Sister's music, which I don't know if, well, I think a lot of people still remember it, but there's a whole couple of generations of people that don't. I don't think people realize what a huge, huge successful group they were. I mean, I think they had something like 46 top 10 hits, which is more than the Beatles and mm-hmm. Elvis. They sold over 75 million records, and that's when records were actually records and not just something you downloaded. They made 17 feature films. They were just huge, yeah. huge stars.
I think of true superstars beginning after kind of rock and roll was ushered in.
Right.
But we're talking about a music scene that was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were big stars in their own right. They had a lot of hits with Bing Crosby. And I mean, try to think of a vocal group that's made 17 feature films where they were, you know, and I remember them when I was a kid watching old movies, especially Buck Privates with Abbott and Costello is one of my favorites. That's where they sing Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy. And that's another part of the show that I think we all love. It's that 1940s Abbott and Costello, Bing Crosby, Bob Hope, screwball comedy, physical humor, style of performing that we love.
Wartime as well, wartime entertainment, which also yes. had carried that element of, you know, pluck and you
yeah.
know,
kind of. Yeah, and doing it for the troops and doing it for the guys. In fact, yeah. the Andrews Sisters were one of the forces in creating the Hollywood Canteen, which was, you know, opened up to entertain for free any of the boys that were fighting in World War II. They could come and have a drink and dance and have food and meet stars. They were instrumental in that, getting that started. So yeah, it has all that. The show has a lot of comedy. It's very, very funny, but amazing singing and harmonies. And
any one particular song when you're going to sleep at night that you can't turn off?
Wow, that's interesting. It sort of depends on whatever we're rehearsing that day.
Is it usually just an 8-bar phrase that keeps going over?
Exactly, exactly. And I sing the lower harmony, which is not the melody, so it's not a particularly pretty line you want to hear in your head all night. But it's really fun to sing. Some of them I knew, like Hold Tight, and obviously Boogie Woogie Bugle Boy, Don't Sit Under the Apple Tree. Those are songs that I knew.
And there's also, in the 1940s, they did a lot of nonsense singing. A lot of novelty lyrics. So like we do the Mayor of Kanakakai and Mersey Dodes and things that you just kind of have to learn phonetically. They're amazing when you hear them trip off the ear. It actually makes your ear smile. But it's not like normal lyrics in a regular musical book show that just kind of go in instinctively because they inform story. This is it's a much trickier thing on the brains. The brain doesn't want to shut down.
So you could get nonsense syllables in your brain for
oh yes
on a loop.
Yep,
oh,
stuck in a cul-de-sac, just going round and round looking for the exit.
Let me ask if what percentage of your career is theater oriented or film oriented or television?
I would say the vast majority of my career has been on stage. I moved to New York in 1992, and that's where I've lived, although I was in Los Angeles when I worked with Larry and Plaid, and I've done a little bit of television, you know, here and there, but definitely mostly musical theater.
And that's where you get to use the full scope of what you can do.
Yeah, I think so. And I just get
a
real, I really enjoy performing in front of a live audience. I think, of course, it would be thrilling to try something new and explore, you know, performing for film or television. But I think my wheelhouse is definitely working with a live audience and the energy that you get from them, and also that you have to produce for them. I mean, it takes a certain amount of actual physical and mental sort of psychic energy to engage a group of people, and I like that. I think that's something that I'm good at, actually. So,
Larry, who is your friend, has started to do both on stage and off stage directing. Is that something that you do? You see yourself doing or have done?
Directing?
Yeah.
I have assisted directed several pieces, and I really do enjoy it. It's actually, in a way, I just did a piece recently back east, and it was I was much more nervous when the curtain went up than I would have been, I think, if I had been in the show. Because if you're in the show, you're in charge of your own destiny. I mean, it's up to you, and you basically know what you're doing and you're going to get it done. But when you're watching this little group of people that you've asked to do a show for you and you're just sitting watching, there's really nothing you can do.
In fact,
a friend of mine who's very successful New York director says he always gets a seat on the aisle in case he has to get up and go to the bar because, oh, the set piece didn't come in, or, oh, that was completely, I'm just going to go get a little cocktail.
Yep. There's a good herbal thing called Nervocom that I found when I was working in Argentina.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Do you find that? It's more stressful. It's more nerve-wracking to watch people.
When you have $1 million worth of somebody's investment and you're the one at the helm.
All on you.
It's all on you. Yeah. It's not for the faint of heart. It's exciting as can be. But, you know, when you've been in all of the design meetings and you have led, well, this is what the set looks like. This is the kind of costuming. This is where the scene change music goes. It's a lot of decisions, but it's great. I mean, it's powerful. And, you know, I think we've all been in this business so long that you trust your instinct.
Yeah, and Larry's he's a great director because he comes from a world of performing himself. And Jeffrey is a great choreographer because he's also a performer and he's doing a great job with choreography.
Well, let's bring Jeffrey Scott Parsons into the conversation. I am speaking with Paul Castry and Larry Raven, who directs The Andrews Brothers, which opens on Friday, April 21st, and continues through May 7th at Farmers Alley Theater. Now, Jeffrey, let's catch everyone else up with your background. Mostly theater, or?
Yeah. I'm actually a farm boy from northern Utah. And kind of fell in love mysteriously with musical theater amidst all the cows and pastures.
There's a good trend of Midwesterners going to New York and hitting the stage.
There you go. So, my family was very supportive, though, and artistic, and we did a lot of community theater together, and I was the only one crazy enough to turn it into a profession. But I went to college, and then when graduated, felt like I needed to either move to Los Angeles or New York, and due to, you know, a magical turn of events, chose LA and got there and started working and haven't really wanted to leave. So I love living in Los Angeles. It's a really diverse entertainment community, and that's where I met Larry and actually got to work with him on The Andrews Brothers, another production of The Andrews Brothers. I covered all three of the brothers. I was kind of the show swing in case any of them needed to go out. They hired me knowing that Larry was going to come back to New York and direct a musical, and so he was going to be missing a few performances. So I learned all of the roles, but particularly kind of played his role, and that's what he asked me to come back to Kalamazoo and do is that particular role.
He was good.
Yeah. I think it's pretty self-explanatory, but you did just use the term swing, and that is a legitimate paid role in a theater production.
It's kind of a, I don't know, like a superpower, I think, that you have to tap into, because you don't necessarily get the opportunity to perform the role every night and keep it fresh. You have to do that all by yourself, so that at any given moment, if an actor has to leave due to, a family emergency, illness, or another job, that you can step into that role and take over without the show losing any sort of momentum or magic.
Yeah, swings are the unsung heroes of Broadway. They are the hardest working people in the building.
Yeah, and because at any moment, if someone gets ill or is injured.
Sure. And in very intricate patterns on stage, yeah, they have to know exactly where they are so that nobody gets hurt and that the play breathes and looks as beautiful and meticulous as it was set to begin with. So,
some listeners may remember a conversation I had last season about with a man named Leonard Sullivan, I believe, who was a Western Michigan University graduate who was a swing for Book of Mormon. And I had to, he talked about that a little bit. And he also said, you can't jump in and create your own interpretation. You need to do it as smoothly as possible for everyone else.
Right.
You really just absolutely have to completely be that cog in the machine.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I find that every swing kind of has their own process of how they learn things. For me, it's always by color. So I'll assign each character a color. And if I'm on stage and I can't remember maybe the next harmony or the next move in the choreography or staging, then I remember which color I am. And then I can kind of envision what on paper, all of my paperwork that I've done, where that looks like and where I go and what I sing. That's how I do it.
That's really good. And I do have to sing Jeffrey's praises, having been with the show from the beginning and now listening to Paul come in and learn these harmonies. These harmonies are really intricate and nonsensical, but the glory of those four parts together or in the second act, which is more of the three-part singing, once you hear it all together, it's amazing. It moves very quickly. But the kind of brain that can hold three of those opposing cross-voicing parts is a very specialized brain.
Very elastic.
So my hat's off to you, Jeffrey. Mm,
thanks.
You think about those arrangements and realize the Andrews sisters polished them up over time, and they would have performed these pieces hundreds and hundreds of times.
Oh, yes.
It's incredible when you go back and listen to how tight they were. And we're talking, there was no auto-tune or going back into a live recording and fixing any sort of pitch problems or intonation problems. They were just so tight. It was incredible.
Yes.
Maybe now's a good time to take a short musical break.
Great.
And hear one of the Andrews Sisters recordings. Which song is in your mind right now?
I'm thinking Apple Tree.
Yeah, do it.
Cast members and the director of the Andrews Brothers, which opens on Friday, April 21st at Farmers Alley Theater in the Little Theater on Oakland Drive. And we've just heard a selection by the Andrews Sisters. Let's get into the story of the Andrews Brothers and how this merry little tale comes
sure.
to be.
Well,
here's Larry.
It's very funny, and we don't want to give away too much, but we'll try to pique your interest. So it's set late in World War II on a South Pacific island, and the Andrews Brothers are three biological brothers that tried to enlist in the armed services, but each one of them has something just a little bit askew about them. And so the best that they could do to serve their country is become stagehands in the USO. But these guys have secret dreams of performing themselves. Being brothers, they've sung with each other for years and years and years. And at the top of Act One, a famous pinup girl, Peggy the Pinup Girl, is arriving, and she is going to be the opening act for the Andrews Sisters, who are coming later that evening to entertain the troops before they go off for a big conflict. So, and she is fresh off this very successful campaign of being this girl that all the soldiers love, and she wants to have a singing career herself. So Act One is about us getting to know the brothers. The brothers sing backup, and with Peggy, she gets to know them. She develops a little crush on one of them, and we won't tell you who that is. And at the end of Act One, there is an event that happens that keeps the Andrews Sisters from being able to come and perform for the troops. So all of Act Two is our four people trying to give the troops the best possible show they can. And it has little hints of Some Like It Hot in it. It's very, very, very funny.
The script, who wrote the script?
Oh, Roger Bean, who also wrote The Marvelous Wonderettes. He wrote Life Could Be a Dream. I know they've done both of those at Farmer's Alley. Roger is very prolific.
What do you know about his process?
Roger actually started as a musical director. He had a development deal with Milwaukee Rep, which is where a lot of the Wonderette shows originally started. But he is a pop music junkie. And so he is trying to do different shows about kind of each decade of music in the American songbook. And this is his love letter to the 1940s. So that's the jumping off point for it. But he's got a really funny brain. He likes to put people in outrageous situations and see how the characters would play it out. His characters they're not snarky. They're earnest.
They're sincere.
They really are sincere. They have big hearts. But they get in their own way, which is what makes it so much fun.
The way that show is structured, does it push itself along? You find as a director that you're changing the paces and tempos of things, or is it pretty much plays itself?
I think the show is really well paced. The thing that's great about Act One is all about getting to know the characters and about feeling that time period. And you know, there's some mistaken identity things that happen. So the first act is the charming act. You're gonna smile, you're gonna chuckle, you're gonna laugh, you're really gonna tap your toes, but it's really getting to know these characters so that when we get to Act Two, and it's balls to the walls comedy, and Act Two is a full on concert. It's live in performance in front of the troops.
Oh my! And as always with Farmer's Alley, I believe there's a live band playing along.
Yeah, it's a 7-piece orchestra. The orchestrations are amazing. And, just listening to the original source recording, and I went, oh, it sounds like that. It's, so to have the four live voices and the 7 live musicians in that small space, the little theater, is going to be amazing.
Do you feel supported by the directing and the music directing? And are all the elements in place for you, Jeffrey, and you, Paul, to get on board with this?
Absolutely. I think what we all have to remind ourselves is that there are 21 musical numbers in this show. Just an incredible amount of music. So sometimes I think it's very easy for the performers of this show to feel like we're drowning a little bit in music. When you think about all that, like, oh my goodness, we just learned the dances for 4 numbers today. How on earth am I going to keep those in mind? And then you think, well, that's because we have 16 more to go. So yeah, so let's keep it going. But what's incredible about Farmer's Alley is that everybody from the artistic staff to our scenic and production staff have all been incredibly kind and warm and welcoming. And it's been a real treat to work together and work together so closely. When you have 3 guys plus our Peggy to work with, you get to know each other really quickly, and I already feel that we're starting to behave like brothers.
Yeah. I agree. I have to mention that our other brother, Jeremy, we should mention him. There is another actor in the cast, and he just, he couldn't be here, but he plays our brother, Lawrence, the third brother. But yeah, no, it's been a great experience so far. It is a big show in terms of how much singing there is, but I think that's part of what the audience is going to love about it. There's so much music in it, and the majority of the numbers that we do are numbers that the guys are rehearsing for the big USO show or that they're trying to put on for the actual show. So it does have that element of, or I should say, it doesn't have a lot of that element that people think about musicals where people burst into song because they're, you know, sort of in love with someone. Although there's a little bit of that because these are characters who express themselves that way. But it also has that element of a show, or putting on a show. So it's sort of almost a show within a show. Mm-hmm. It's a show about putting on a show. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's very easy to get on board. There's nothing too complicated about that aspect of watching it. Yeah.
As a choreographer, I have a dumb question.
No, never a dumb question.
Can you start choreographing before you see the actual stage, like before you're standing on it?
Absolutely. I think that there's a lot of, at least for me, when I go into a project, I want to be as prepared as possible. So I'll, you know, have a lot of phone calls with Larry about what the space looks like, what are our dimensions, what does the set look like. I try to do a little Facebook stalking of our cast members to kind of see who they are.
Facebook stalking?
Yeah, that's what my generation calls it. To kind of see what their bodies are like, how they might move, even, you know, little video clips now and then can kind of show you how a person moves, so that I have an as close an idea when walking into the first rehearsal of what we can do together. I will say, though, that I hadn't met anybody except for Larry before the first day of rehearsal.
Which was when?
When was that?
It's not that long ago, right?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay.
So walking into the first rehearsal, it was a lot of testing out and seeing what looked good on people's bodies and you know, taking what maybe has been done before with other productions of the Andrews Brothers and really fine-tuning it and making it work for this group.
What did the Andrews sisters typically do for choreography?
Well, it's funny because, you know, Patty was the star. Patty Andrews. She, yeah, and you look at her and she just is a firecracker. You can't really look at anybody else. But so she's got all of this pizzazz and all of these like great unexpected faces and then everybody else around her is just kind of bebopping. But we've tried to make it a little bit more than that, for sure.
I mean, they had a couple, if you know them, a couple sort of signature moves, which are impossible to explain verbally, but things they did with their shoulders. Although I did read something about them where they had worked with the Ritz brothers. I'm not even sure who the Ritz brothers are. And apparently stole some of their moves when they made Buck Privates. Some of that shoulder stuff and some of the... that's not even a... It's a boogie woogie step,
yeah,
right? It's from the time.
It's a great time to pull from a dance standpoint because you have the introduction of boogie into mainstream culture. So a lot of stuff that probably had been happening in clubs or you know, exciting places in cities were finally finding its way to suburbs and the middle class of America, So it's a really fun kind of pastiche to play with. You've got the boogie, you've got the country being really interested in Brazil and Cuba and all things Latin American.
That's right.
And yet there's always this kind of stiff white version of it that kind of becomes the more popular version.
Well, I think you know which song I'm going to play next.
What is it?
Boogie Woogie.
Oh, yeah, let's see it.
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now. They know how he plays. When someone gives him a beat, he really breaks it up. When he plays reveille, he's the boogie woogie bugle part of Company B. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
If you tuned in during the music, we're playing less Mozart and a little more swing music from the 1940s because I'm with cast and director of The Andrews Brothers, which opens at Farmer's Alley Theater on Friday, April 21st, and continues through May 7th. Tickets are available now through the website, farmersalleytheater.com, and the location of the show is the Little Theater on Oakland Drive, just to make sure everyone's on the same page with that. We've talked a little about the careers of Paul Castry and Jeffrey Scott Parsons and director Larry Raven, and a little about the show and how the setup works. These Andrews brothers are called to action for a USO show that unexpectedly it changes around quite a bit. And we've talked about some of the performance aspects of it, some of the choreography, the live music. Gosh, what else can we?
Comedy.
Okay, Larry, why don't...
Well, I was just going to say, I was really, really happy that Patty Andrews was still alive when we were first doing the show in Los Angeles. And so we were able to get an archive recording of the show to her, and she loved it. She couldn't actually physically get to the theater, but she gave it two big thumbs up. So
really?
She thought it was really, really funny and a great homage to what she and her sisters had created.
So you were thinking of her... and in your performance.
Oh, absolutely. I was channeling everything that I could. As Jeffrey talked a little bit about her style, she had such pizzazz that you didn't see in other people. You know, the Bing Crosbys all made it look very easy. And Patty, she almost had little electrodes to her eyeballs. I mean, she really had like sparkle that came out, but she had, she just grabbed you. You know, right through the camera lens.
Do you think she was like that in person, like in real life?
I heard that she was very vivacious. I've actually met Maxine's partner, Linda Wells, who lived with her in the later part of her life, talked about the dynamic of the different women. And she said, Patty was just very, very much alive. She was a big personality at all times.
That's because she was the baby.
And Paul would know.
You sound
and
like...
And I know because I'm the baby.
You're the baby.
But of five, and we didn't sing together growing up.
Larry, when you played one of the roles on stage, which role was it?
I played Patrick / Patty Andrews.
And which one of these...
Paul is... Oh, Jeffrey.
That's me.
Jeffrey is doing that here.
Okay, now the question is... you know, you played his role. How, as director, do you let him choose to make his own choices?
Yeah, absolutely. For me, especially having been involved with Forever Plaid so much and having directed it all over the world, a show is a living, breathing piece of art. And so to try to force any actor to be a carbon copy of any other actor just rings false. You know, there are 100 ways to get a laugh kind of in any moment, and there are about 3 really smart ones, but all 3 of those smart ones are legitimate. So the fun for me is seeing what does another actor inform that I never thought about in the moment or in the role. How do these 3 brothers work together? And I'm really happy to say we took a very different approach to the relationship of these brothers, a little more screwball comedy than when I had worked on the show before. And we're laughing a lot during rehearsals. We're having a great time with it. And then you add Deneen as Peggy Jones into it. And she just has just a great sense of showmanship. And so it's interesting to watch how each one of these brothers reacts to our Peggy the Pinup Girl.
And what's really inspiring about Larry is that he comes into this project, like all of his other projects, usually having worked on them before. You know, he's done Forever Plaid everywhere, he's done Andrews Brothers everywhere, and yet he never walks into the room saying, this is what it is. He comes in with a sense of wonder and imagination and saying, all right, you guys tell me and I'll tell you and we'll work on it together. It's really inspiring.
Well, sometimes you do want someone to say, just do it this way.
Yeah, and there are a couple of things where I'll say, okay, now this works really, really well, and let's see how it fits in your body, because what's funny on one comedian is not always funny on another. You know, comedians, comedic actors do have their own style. But yeah, some bits are foolproof, and so we've taken the best of that world and blended it with what's new and fresh about these guys.
Yeah, and I think that's been great working with Larry, because he said right away, you know, come up with stuff. And so I'm always raising my hand and saying, what if? But, you know, as an actor in a piece like this, which is so fast-paced and zany, and there is a lot of comedy, you can come up with a lot of choices. But it's great to have a director who not only is an actor as well and a funny actor and understands comedy, so the director can say, what about this? And you can think about it and go, great, now check. I don't have to, that's a great moment. You know, I'll do that, of course. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with doing something that's worked. I would rather do something. And he knows the piece, so he knows the tone of it. You know, I'm new to it, so that sounds funny to me. Let's do that. And let's, you know, you don't have to come up with absolutely everything on your own. Although I think it's nice for a director if an actor comes in and has some ideas, so he's just not sort of moving you like a stop motion doll. Huh?
Claymation director.
Somebody's a nerd.
Well, it's also, I mean, it's your job as an actor to know what you do best.
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
And bring it.
And a piece like this requires people that are really seasoned. You know, I thank God with Jeff and Jeremy and Danine and Paul, they all have been at this a long, long time. So they come with a really fun bag of tricks that they have honed, their comedic thing that they've honed over time. But they just know how to be so present, and they're malleable because they can do so many things so well.
We're not that old, though. It sounds like he's saying that we're old.
Just experience.
We are old. It's just that Jeffrey's not old.
We've heard the name Jeremy and Danine a few times, and Kalamazooans will know them as Jeremy Koch and Danine Moulay Koch. Talking about veterans, they've been in so many theatrical productions and are two founding members of the theater itself, Farmer's Alley. So it's a treat to have them included.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, I haven't worked with either of them before, but of course, you know, I've seen them do things, and they're both so good. And it's nice for them as husband and wife to get to experience each other as actors again on stage, which is how they met and fell in love. So,
question, when you see founders like the Koches and the Weiner brothers have a successful regional theater in a town like Kalamazoo, does it kind of get you thinking like, well, I want that too?
I actually have done it. So I'm a founding member of Coyote Stage Works in Palm Springs, California. David and I make our home in Los Angeles, but my best friend from acting school when I was 20 years old in New York, Chuck Yates, lives in Palm Springs. And he kind of said, I believe what, you know, Jeremy and the Weiner brothers did here is we need a year-round equity theater, a regional theater that we can premiere some things, but also do the plays and small musicals that we want to. And so we founded Coyote Stage Works 8 years ago. And so I have many conversations with Jeremy and the Weiner brothers just about how do you stay in business? How do you, you know, as with NPR, you know, you always have to be fundraising.
Right.
And but it's important to have these. I think you can really tell about the smarts and the quality of a community by looking at its arts scene.
And how does it help in the scheme of theater, from the smallest theater to the big, to Broadway? I mean, where does it belong, and what is its importance to have a theater like this?
I think it's absolutely important, and this is not to demean anyone who works on a community theater level. Those are incredibly important training grounds for young actors. They are the lifeblood of many, many communities, and that it gets people continuing to go to the theater and excited about the theater. The thing that I believe the regional theater does better than anyone else, they can give you titles that the community theaters can't safely do. So you get to hear new stories, which is very important. And most of these people, like Jeremy and Deneen, have a network of people that they worked with on Broadway, that they worked with on tour, and they're able to bring these artists in. And so we as artists get to know about this great city of Kalamazoo. I would never, ever have been here any other way that I know of. And I'm having a great time here, but also we get to share our artistry with people. So I think regional theater is really that bridge between the community and with people that eventually then go to New York and see things in New York and see national tours.
I have an opportunity to work with high school kids a lot. Mm-hmm. And kind of the one thing that I have started saying all the time is make Broadway where you are. I think that it's so important to not limit the fullness of art to a zip code, right? And the benefits of that art to its community. I think that as we continue in our society where we have our phones with us and it seems somewhat easier and safer to watch Netflix on your couch at home rather than go out into the world and sit next to strangers in a movie theater or in a live theater, that theater specifically is going to become more and more important because it forces people together to experience something together, to kind of go through a almost like transformative experience. Yeah. Together, where you go into the theater all coming from different walks of life, different careers, different routes to the theater, and then you sit together and have this collective experience and walk out changed in some way, hopefully entertained, hopefully uplifted, hopefully excited to go back to whatever you are doing. And the best way to do that is with professionals in professional theater. And that's why I really look up to Kalamazoo, because they have cultivated this arts culture that a lot of towns of its size don't see in our country. And so bravo to you guys for doing that.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Paul, one last word.
I agree with everything they've said. No, I do. I do. I'm not kidding. I do. And I also think that, I worked with, my very first job was with an actor director named Tommy Toon, and I remember him saying that, theater is handed down person to person. And I think that's really true. You learn things from the people that you work with. And so there's nothing better than getting out of New York for a while and meeting new people and learning things from them. And they learn things from you, hopefully. And like Jeffrey said, and then you have people of this community, they get to come and share an experience together of storytelling, right? That's really what theater has been around for thousands of years. It's just telling a story and having everyone experience it together, which I think is magical, really.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And in very good hands. It is, you almost want to pay twice.
Well, I know
we'll
that
take
the,
it.
I know the audiences are going to love this show. I mean, sincerely, it is just, it's a rare show that has such great music in it that will be new to some people and they'll love it, but that it is so funny and not cynical. I think it's very popular in New York right now, and there's a place for it to be sort of always commenting on, oh, here we are doing a number. And there's a wink, wink to the audience, like, isn't this silly doing theater? But I enjoy more doing a piece where all the characters mean it. I think that's something I learned really early on, which is a good lesson with Forever Plaid. Our director, Stuart, was adamant about, and the creator of the show, about playing it for real. First of all, it's funnier that way anyway, instead of commenting on it. And it also is just more meaningful, and the audience won't know why, but it'll mean more to them when they see the show. And that's what this show has, too, that sort of sincere heart as well as the laughs.
Well, we have time for one more Andrews Sisters song about which the Andrews Brothers will feature. And it's one that you mentioned before we even went on the air, Hold Tight.
That was their one of their number one hits.
And also has some bizarre words that make no sense.
Well, I want to thank Jeffrey, Paul, and Larry for joining us today here on WMUK to preview The Andrews Brothers. You want to remind us once again?
Thank you so much for having us here. It starts April 21st and runs through May 7th. That's April 21st through May 7th at the Little Theater on Oakland Drive, Farmers Alley Theater.
And Larry, knowing that your job as director sort of ends on the opening night.
Yes.
Will you be heading back to Los Angeles? Do you have another?
I will. Yeah, I've gotten 7 more things lined up between now and October. So I'm on a happy little treadmill there.
Well, I hope we see you back here again in the next few seasons.
Would love it.
Broadway Foo Cincinnati, don't get icky with the 1, 2, 3. Life is just so fine on the solid side of the line. Flip, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. Put a yakasaki, want some seafood, mama. Shrimp's